This is Warren Ajous, author of Evidence of Extraterrestrials. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I'm doing an episode on the Ghost Blimp. It happened in 1942, August 16th to be exact, and it involves two crewmen, Lieutenant Ernest DeWitt Cody and Ensign Charles Adams. And before I get into the story, I'll just give you a brief summary of these two crewmen. After the airship lifted off from Treasure Island, San Francisco, California, the Ghost Blimp, which is also referred to L8, returned back to the coast of San Francisco without the two crewmen. They were presumed to be dead, lost at sea. I find it very ironic that they never found the bodies. They couldn't determine if the bodies were captured by the Japanese, or were they abducted by alien UFO spacecraft, or did they just simply jump ship, so to speak, and go AWOL? But where are they going to jump ship to? I'm going to get into that after these brief messages.
Hi, my name is Wendy M. Koch, and I'm the author of A Gray Resort and my newest book, An Awakening, that just came out this past January. And you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley with Al Cooley.
After the United States declared war on Japan in response to Pearl Harbor, the Imperial Japanese Navy sank at least a half a dozen of Allied ships off the West Coast over a period of several months. Heightening the fears of an invasion, one of the responses by the Navy included a takeover of Goodyear's 5 airship fleet in California. These Goodyear blimps were incorporated into an L-class. While they were too small for any extensive operational use, the blimps were considered ideal for training missions and coastal anti-submarine patrols. So let's start from the beginning. At 6:03, on August 16, 1942, the L-8, or also known as the Ghost Blimp, having been assigned to Airship Patrol Squadron 32, lifted off from Treasure Island, San Francisco, on a coastal anti-submarine patrol. Its scheduled route would have taken the airship over the Farallon Islands, Point Reyes, and Monterra before circling back towards the Golden Gate Bridge. Inside the car were Lieutenant Ernest DeWitt Cody, age 27, and his co-pilot, Ensign Charles Adams, age 35. It was Adams' first flight as a commissioned officer. The Ghost Blimp was armed with 2 depth charges and 130 caliber machine gun. At the time of the incident, the airship had made 1,092 previous trips without incident and had recently been inspected. Conditions on the morning of the flight were clear. At 7:38, 1.5 hours later, the Ghost Ship crew radioed to Treasure Island and reported observing an oil slick 4 miles off the coast of the Farallon Islands. A Liberty ship and a fishing boat in the area witnessed the Ghost Blimp descending to within 30 feet of the ocean surface and circling the oil slick. This would constitute the last confirmed sighting of the airship with the crew aboard. Controllers at Treasure Island lost contact with the crew at 8:50 a.m. The Ghost Blimp ascended and headed east, contrary to its intended course, which was to the northwest. At 11:15 a.m., the ghost blimp reappeared off the coast of Ocean Beach and drifted towards the coastline at a low elevation. The airship touched down on the beach, where two fishermen tried to hold it down by its tie lines. Upon looking inside its control car, the fishermen observed that no crew were inside. As the fishermen were unable to hold the airship down any longer, it rose briefly into the air before running into a hill, causing damage to its starboard propeller and dislodging one of its depth charges, relieving it of enough weight to gain altitude. An automatic valve inside the ghost blimp was opened and began releasing helium gas, causing the airship to take a sagging V-shaped appearance as it deflated. The ghost blimp drifted inland over the Olympic Club golf course, attracting the attention of a large crowd of onlookers who followed its journey. Floating over San Francisco's Crocker Amazon neighborhood, the airship lost elevation and began scraping telephone poles and residential houses. The ghost blimp finally crashed in front of a house at 419 Bellevue Avenue, Daly City. Police and military personnel immediately descended upon the air crash. While the control car doors were found dangling open, the crash had been so gentle that the crewmen would have walked away unharmed, but neither Cody nor Adams were found inside. Searches of the coastline from air, land, and sea found no traces of the missing pilots. Authorities initially theorized that Cody and Adams had bailed out of the ghost blimp over the ocean. But all three parachutes and a rubber life raft were found aboard the control car. Furthermore, the airship's radio and engines were switched on and no distress transmissions had been sent, indicating that the crewman's disappearance had been abrupt. A board of investigation convened by the Navy could only determine that the ghost blimp had not been shot down, burned, or made contact with the ocean, and that Cody and Adams had not engaged in misconduct. Cody and Adams were declared legally dead approximately 1 year later in 1943. The official theory was that in order to deploy a smoke marker at the site of the oil slick, one of the crew members had opened the rear hatch. He then slipped and, dangling from the hatch, shouted for assistance. When the other crew member attempted to rescue him, they both fell out of the ghost blimp. The sudden loss of weight would have caused the airship to rapidly gain altitude. Outside of official circles, various scenarios were immediately put forward attempting to explain Cody and Adams' disappearances and the circumstances of the ghost blimp's mysterious flight. This included speculation that the crewmen had either been captured or defected to Japan, that their disappearance was a result of desertion, or other more outlandish scenarios, as even being abducted by aliens. Now, when the ghost blimp crashed into the yard, the first person on the scene was William Morris, a volunteer fireman who lived in the house that the ghost blimp landed right in front of and had watched the course of the blimp from his front door. Morris rushed to aid the crew, which would surely be inside the gondola of the blimp. But as he approached it, he noticed something a touch unusual. The doors were open and nobody was in the cabin. Volunteer firefighters tore the blimp's envelope open to see if the crew might somehow be trapped inside, but they were nowhere to be found. The fabric of the balloon flattened out, stretching across the road and draping over an automobile owned by Richard Johnson, Morris's neighbor, as hundreds of spectators gathered. A team of salvagers from the Navy arrived an hour of the crash. They found that the parachutes in the gondola were in their proper place. The two life belts that were to be worn by the crew were gone. The life raft stowed in its spot and the radio still in good working order. Most of the fuel had been dumped and the engines of the airship were still switched in the on position, so no gasoline was being supplied to them. Hence their silence. Even a conventional file containing classified information was still in the gondola. So aside from the rips in the fabric from tearing across the rooftops, a check of helium gas valves showed that they were set exactly where they should have been, and the airship was perfectly airworthy. The only thing missing was the crew of two. The L-8, or also known as the Ghost Blimp, was quickly repaired and returned to service following the incident. After the war, the airship was sold back to Goodyear and renamed America, flying over sporting events as part of Goodyear's blimp fleet until it was retired in 1982. Its control car was repainted back to its L-8 markings and given to the National Naval Aviation Museum in Pensacola, Florida, where it sits on display today. In conclusion, it always bothers me when I read stories of fighter jets chasing UFOs, and then the fighter jet ends up missing, the crew members missing, no sight of the crew members or the aircraft ever recovered. And in this case, the two crew members that lost their lives on this ghost blimp, the L-8. So my thoughts are, if everything was intact in the cabin of the blimp, the descending cable that would lower either one of the crew members down to the oil slick from the blimp was still in its rightful position. So that never happened. The lifeboats were never released, so they didn't go AWOL. Everything was intact. The only thing missing are the crew members. So what happened on this blimp off the coast of San Francisco? But what bothers me the most, like I said, is they never found the bodies of Lieutenant Ernest DeWitt Cody and Ensign Charles Adams. I would love to hear any insight that you may have on this. What do you think happened to the bodies? What happened to these two crew members that were in this blimp and just disappeared? There were fishing boats around that blimp that actually watched the blimp lower itself to about 30 feet above the ocean waters to observe this oil slick. And then the boats watched the blimp rise above the cloud. So something happened when the blimp regained altitude and headed back towards San Francisco. Could you imagine being on the beach and a blimp's headed right towards you, and you grab hold of the lines, and you're trying to control the blimp, and there's nobody in the cabin. There's nobody in the blimp, and then you lose control of the blimp, and it goes over the hill and crashes into a house or in the front yard of a home, and everything's intact in that cabin except the two missing crew members. I would love to hear what your thoughts are on this. Did the two crew members jump out of the blimp into the waters? Did they fall out of the blimp into the water? Were they captured by the Japanese? Or was there a UFO involved in this incident? Leave me your comments at cooley54@gmail.com. Link will be in the bottom of this episode. Also, if you go to Ghost in the Valley podcast on Facebook, there will be a picture of the blimp as it's deflating before it crashed. I'm your host, Al Cooley, and thank you for listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.